Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Friends, you are in for such a blessing today. I am seated here with the amazing Jay Wolf and the incredible Jarrett and Jeannie Stevens, who are actually our camp pastors for the week. But when they're not in Nauvoo, Alabama at Hope Hills Camp, they're number one place to be.
Yes.
They are pastoring an incredible church in Chicago called Soul City Church, where Jay and I have actually had the opportunity to share, and it is such an incredible congregation. We were so blessed to be there, actually. We loved your church.
Well, they love you guys.
Beautiful and diverse and just like, solid and deep. It was very moving to be there. So what a gift that y'all are here teaching campers. Yeah. Well, and we're seated in the back porch of our cabin here at camp. It's
That's
really special.
Spot.
It's
beautiful.
Old growth, I think they call it, and the old growth all around us and that Alabama heat.
Ever-present.
It's something good.
It's intense, nearly oppressive.
Yes.
But
kind of like
nearly oppressive.
Feels like spiritual attack. It's right on the
Okay. Maybe hard.
Listen, we love getting to be with you in person because actually, we thought we'd met Jared in person, but
nope,
we have not.
No, we acted
we acted like
we'd hung out, but we
haven't digitally.
Yeah.
We weren't there when you guys were at Soul City.
That's right.
That's right. And
but
then
getting
I
to,
met
yeah.
Jeannie if gathering.
Yep.
Come back
so.
With Jeannie.
And
yep,
it was
so
an instant, I mean, I'm hoping you felt this way, but I just felt an instant soul connection when I met you all.
Yeah.
And
totally.
I was like, these are my kind of people. They live at the deep end. And that's always where I prefer to live. I'm not good at small talk.
Yeah,
I'm not good at like
either.
Trying to just like surface. Get to know somebody on the surface level.
Oh, for
and
sure.
So
oh,
it's
me
like,
too.
Oh, my people.
No.
My people.
Likewise.
So.
It's actually really a struggle of mine to be around people whose lives are all kind of picture perfect.
Yeah. Same.
Typical. It's really a struggle because I'm like, you don't get it. You're not living on the edge. Your life's not falling apart. You're not in deep suffering. I don't have time for you.
Right.
So
we have nothing to talk about.
Right. We have nothing in common, and I'm annoyed. It's really kind of a sad thing.
Or the problem for me is that I'll try to like poke them to the deep end,
right?
If I sense somebody just living on the surface, I'm like, so tell me about the hardest thing that's ever happened to you.
And they're
like,
she's real fun at parties. Jeannie,
your name. Party's name again.
It's really ridiculous that we do this, though, because it's like, why not just celebrate that someone's in a season without major suffering?
Yeah.
And
right.
Instead, I'm like, no, you have it
no,
too
you have
good.
To have it. That's right.
It's so
sad. Have to poke holes in that.
Well, I mean, yeah, and the Stevens led so beautifully today over our camp community who does, you know, the reality is we share this bond deeply of pain and suffering and a different story, but also...
Yeah.
There's all variations of that, and people are at different stages in their story and their journey of healing. You know, literally as fresh as a couple months ago, somebody could have received a major diagnosis that brought them to camp. Or, you know, this could have been a lifelong thing, but they're 15, 20 years in. And so y'all led just so poignantly today to help give us handles around the seasons that we're in and the reality that God is at work in every different kind of season in the moment and the season that we're in currently.
Yeah.
His silence doesn't mean he's abandoned us.
Right.
And that we are together in this space and remembering sort of what it means to be in community no matter the season you're in.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was electric and it was healing.
Wow.
And
it was.
Yeah, we each kind of like raised our hand for the season we're in.
Yeah, tell the
summer,
listener
winter, fall.
How it went down, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, they laid out the seasons of a life that we're all kind of experiencing at any given moment, and we get to sort of pray over each person who was in each given season,
right.
Including
so
ending in kind of...
people would self-identify by standing up which season they were in.
Yes.
Yeah. And...
ending in winter, which again is... fall had almost everybody.
It was half the room.
Season of,
more
you know,
than half the room.
Letting go and transition, and things are not what they used to be. And, and then winter, it was just sort of this, again, sort of this reverse upside-down kingdom crescendo, but to say, but there is this hope we're still going to gather together for
and
believe it's coming.
I was obsessing to read the room to see if a sweet friend whose family came to camp last year, the full family, the husband and the three children, one of whom is profoundly disabled, and her husband died in February. Mm. And she's back here this summer, and she pulled into camp. Yeah. We're at the welcome party, and she shows us her, what's that called on your phone?
Her phone,
her lock screen or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Lock screen, it's their family portrait from camp last year. Wow. She just says, we're here to make new memories without... a dad. Yeah. Mm. And
well, she said we were happy then.
We were happy then.
And you know,
you said
there's sort of a dot, dot, dot. Like, will we ever be again?
Yeah.
And that's a valid question.
Yep.
But then when I saw her stand up today, Jane and I rushed over to her. She's just sobbing out loud. And I just thought, this is so good that there is a place for wailing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to unbelievable.
And not have people rush to fix it. I think that's, I don't know why it is in Christian spaces so often we feel like we have to fix the season that people are in or get them out of the hard ones and get and idealize.
Exactly.
And we do more harm than good and oftentimes doing that. And so, to be in a space where you can say, this is where I'm at. And I won't always be here, haven't always been here.
Right.
But that the fact that people can surround me and be with me while I'm here, that's what it's.
Yes.
That's what community, spiritual community is at its best, is when it comes around us and doesn't try and fix us, just holds that space with us.
And that's the power of feeling our emotions and letting ourselves be seen. I was sharing even today that, I don't know, maybe the two of you feel this way as well. The older I get, the more I realize humans are looking for the simplest of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you see me?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know me?
Mm-hmm.
And do you love me?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be seen. We want to be known and we want to be loved. Mm-hmm. And so often the way that that shows up is our emotions, right? These things that come through our bodies. And, you know, the interesting thing about an emotion is not looking for an answer. Your friend that was wailing was not looking for an answer.
No.
Right. She was just looking for you to hold space. Mm-hmm. And so often when we have probably the bigger emotions, right? The intense sadness, the intense anger, the intense overwhelm, we think we need to give it an answer. And really what the people of God can offer one another is this gift of, I see you.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I know you.
Yeah.
I love you.
Mm.
And if we could just start to offer that to one another in the hard and in the good.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both.
In both.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you guys teed that up today. Yeah, in a way that we won't forget. And hopefully when we go back to our lives and the seasons change or they remain, like that we would have the gift of remembering.
Yeah, like the language
space.
Or framework. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that it was so helpful for us because many other writers have spoken to this long before we ever got here and way better than we ever will. But that helped us to go, we have a shared language. Like, I know you're in this season and I'm in this season and that's okay. We can be in the same house in different seasons.
Yeah.
But that shared framework and understanding, it helps massively to know where I'm at, where God's at, where each other are at. So I hope it helped.
It was so helpful. We have been to your church, and this is a shift a little bit, but just seeing how you pastored us today, it's no wonder your church is just such a thriving, beautiful community. We were so moved by it, and we've been to a lot of churches, and they're all great in their own way, but your
church— ours is your favorite, probably.
It was
our
favorite. Yeah, I didn't want to say that.
Okay. I mean, just say it,
Jeff. You don't have to name other ones, but you can say
I am all right up there, for sure.
Top 10.
For
I'll take it.
Good, Catherine.
But,
tell us about, just a little bit about the journey of starting that community and—
But you planted it, right?
Like scratch. Yes. 13 years ago
13
or something like that.
Ago.
That's right.
Wow.
As well as doing it together. Because just a quick aside, you know, we do our ministry and our life and all of it's super integrated. We hope more interdependent than codependent.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say,
it's a lot of work to go from codependent to interdependent.
That's right. We're hoping it's not a mesh.
We're trying to work it out. But I once had a friend years after the stroke and we were starting to do ministry together and he was like, gosh, I can't believe, you know, I can't believe that you all do this and everything that you've been through. I'm just so sorry. And I was like, oh, that's all right, man. He's like, well, I can't believe you work with your spouse. Like, that,
oh, that's
right. That's
what
I'm saying. Well, that's hard. Yeah. Yes.
No, forget about the stroke and everything, right, but right, just right, like right, working right. with
the
your spouse.
Part.
So how do you guys, how have you approached that? How, what's
well,
the story?
Well, we have said that it is our desire to make sure that we work harder behind the scenes so that what people receive from us is healthy and whole, that our work doesn't need to be worked out on them.
Yeah.
And
we could take a note.
Yeah. Because it's always work. Yeah. It's always work to, you know, offer yourself to one another to understand that we are fully different people. We're different kinds of leaders. We have different opinions. We have different perspectives on something. The way that he would solve a problem is different than how I would solve a problem. And so to offer that to one another and to try to integrate it together as a sense of oneness, that we could offer oneness while still being our separate selves.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, early on, we got this metaphor and we were like, okay, we do not want to be a two-headed monster to people. That they feel like, you know, when I'm talking to one, I'm going to get something totally different from the other, or that, you know, it isn't confidential when I'm talking with Jarrett. Is he just going to tell Jeannie, you know? And so we'll
have times
really
like the staff will say to me like, well, I'm sure Jeannie told you. I'm like, actually, no, she didn't tell me. So you're telling me now. Yeah. So we really try and hold those lines and those spaces for others and for ourselves.
Because we feel like the healthier we can be in our oneness in our marriage, that is an overflow to our church. And we also have had to work really hard to be reminded that we were married before we started this ministry.
Yes.
And to not let the ministry overtake our marriage. Yeah. And if I'm being really honest, that's been some of the hardest work.
I bet.
Because we have two kids. Elijah's 17, Gigi's 15.
And how long have you been married?
We've been married 27
years.
Wow, that's amazing.
Married when you were 12.
But in honesty, it feels like we have this third kid called Soul City Church. Yeah. And I bet you guys feel
very
the same about Hope Hills.
Yeah,
it's for sure.
Really needy, and it sometimes still feels like a toddler.
Very naughty.
And we can spend so much of our energy on on that ministry that we love, that we believe in, that we know God called us to. But we have to remind ourselves, long after this ministry, we want to be married.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
want our marriage to thrive. Long after this ministry, we're going to be these two kids' parents. And and we don't want them to get lost in the movement of this ministry as well. So I think that's been so much of our work that we've done together with the support of therapists and counselors and spiritual directors, people that have come alongside of us that, you know, we've just had to say, hey, here's where I think we're winning and here's where we are really losing and we're really struggling, and get honest about that.
Yeah, I think the image that the therapist we're working with right now is so, so stinking helpful. And it's been repeated. This has been our work because we've been working together for 25 years in one way or another. We either side by side in the same ministry or organization, or you know, I would support work that Jeannie was doing. She would support things that I was doing. So we've kind of always done it together in some capacity. But our therapist said, you guys are really good at shoulder to shoulder. Your work is face to face. You guys crush it with shoulder to shoulder. Like we can get together and get productive and get things done, and move things forward and all that stuff. And that's great. That's fine. But our work will always be our intimacy, our face-to-face. That's the work we have to keep doing. That's what Jeannie's talking about, behind the scenes, you know, like sewing into our marriage, sewing into our family. That connectedness is what everything else will come out of, hopefully. So, we started the church from scratch together 13 years ago. And it's been a wild ride. It feels a lot easier and at times even better to get something done together than to just be together.
Right.
Like, look at all these people we helped and look at all that we did.
Right,
and we did it together. But it's like,
but productivity doesn't grow intimacy.
Yeah, anything can work against it.
Yeah, that's so true.
Probably, Whoa. Like, I'm going to cry.
Well, you guys are, clearly the work, the roots of the work continue to bear this beautiful fruit in your family, and then overflowing out into your church and into your city.
But I will say, I mean, it's so
well done.
It's imperfect,
right?
In every way, shape, or form. You know, we were both just saying the other day, the place where we feel the most stretched right now as people is as parents. You know, our kids are 17 and 15. And Jared said to our 17-year-old the other,
Yeah, I was like, buddy, this is as far as I've ever parented. Like, you are as far as I've ever gotten. And so lots of mistakes and lots of places. Yeah, that's, I think that's, and I actually appreciate that. I'm glad that the thing we're praying about the most and the thing that we're devoting the most amount of our time, energy, and effort to is our kids, is our family in this season. And yeah, I mean, it is stretching and humbling and beautiful. And they're amazing and they inspire us and they call us out on our crap and they're like the incredible gifts, you know, that for us, that's what we want to give our best energy and effort to our marriage and to our kids. Mm.
And to be present with them.
Yeah.
To be present right where they're at. And
yeah, like we were just talking about, hold the space with seasons there.
Yeah. You know, I was sharing this with Catherine yesterday. You know, I have such a tendency to not live in the now. I mean, like, you know, like when you go to the mall and you're like, I need a Starbucks. I want a coffee. Mm-hmm. And you like go to the mall map and you're like, okay, where am I? How do I get to the place where there's caffeine? Right? You look for the red dot. I have such a hard time being at my own red dot, being in this moment. I'm either like going back and rehashing something that didn't go right. There's blame, there's shame, there's guilt, there's grief. There's all the things I haven't processed from the past, or I'm out in the future, right? And I'm like trying to rehearse all the things that haven't yet come. I'm worrying about it. I'm trying to control it all. And I feel like especially with parenting, it's the place where I have to remind myself over and over and over again, be here now. There's nowhere else to be. There's nothing else to do. This current problem, God's going to be with you in this present moment to solve whatever it is. And maybe it's nothing to solve. Maybe it's just to be here with whatever your kids are experiencing and to walk through it with them. But man, I can talk about it, doing it so much harder.
It's so interesting. Y'all have 17 and 15, so you're living the decidedly teenage years.
Very.
And I don't know if it's harder or easier. Both are really hard, but we're living two stages. Mm-hmm. We're living the 15-year-old decidedly teeny feels angst and 8-year-old. So it's
very different seasons.
Very different and very hard.
Yes, very hard.
But maybe two teens at once would be harder. So perspective is everything.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this is.
I don't really know how people have a bunch of kids. All these people like Hope Hills Camp attracts like
I've noticed
families.
That.
Well, I have definitely a lot of theories about it. One theory that I think is actually true is if you're in the disability space already, you're like, we're already doing really hard things. Yeah. It's already.
What's one more?
What's one more thing? Mm-hmm. Like a bunch of kids and adoption and adoption from the foster system and just a lot of that ones that could be very difficult, but they're like, we're doing hard stuff anyway.
Just double down. Keep going.
One more. Big deal.
But to be here now is the work.
Right. No matter if you have kids or don't have kids, there's enough work to do there.
It is the work.
For sure.
Yeah. And looking at Jesus and his ministry was about, you know, being interrupted to be in the moment with suffering and through the lens of compassion to see what was right in front of him and to change the outcome by stopping and seeing and intervening.
I forget, it's an old kind of thought that I'd heard and I don't think really fully understood until, honestly, Jeannie started doing a lot more work on presence, you know, is that Jesus was, you never find Jesus in a rush. He's never in a hurry, even though he had the greatest mission in the world. Like everything hinged on him getting to the finish line and him, you know, fulfilling every single prophecy. And yet, not once. It almost looks at times like he's meandering. It's like, where are you? But he's just so present. And not just to others, but, you know, the pattern, the rhythm I love is he pulls away. He pulls away to be present just to God, to himself, in those quiet, still places. And so, yeah, there's a lot more to that, a lot more work for me to do in that of just being present to God and to others, not being running off to the next thing and racing off and having the next thought in my head, just be present for what's here now.
I think John Swinton is the theologian that calls it the speed of love, which is about 3 miles per hour.
That's right. How fast we walk.
Have you heard that? I love that.
I love that too.
And it's just freeing too to be like, you're not missing something. Nope. You're not being inefficient or like not getting it all done. Like this is love. And yeah. this is the speed that it goes at. And it's
and
way
that's always
different.
Where God is too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's Father Richard Rohr that says that we cannot attain the presence of God because we're already in the presence of God. Mm. Yeah. What's absent is our awareness.
Just, that's what's missing.
Pay attention.
Yeah, just pay attention. Yeah. He's always here right now in this moment. Like this moment is the only moment we get, and it's sacred if we decide to let it be sacred.
Yeah.
Right. If we decide to say, God is here in the chirping birds, in the hot humidity.
but it's also not hard here.
Yeah.
I think what's fascinating is for so many of our families, and probably even for us if we're honest, this is such a sacred space that it's easier.
Yeah.
That in the routine of life,
wrong with that.
The sacred space is back at camp, you know, or back at this mountaintop, whatever that looks like.
Right.
And the work is to find the sacred
In the everyday.
In the everyday, exactly. Yeah.
In the hard and the good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm into it.
Yes.
Well, down.
The big thing.
I don't know. Speaking of the deep end, if you're ready to jump in even more. But I think, you know, you guys, we love that you all are here, not necessarily having the story of disability in your life, but having loss and grief and fairly recently. And again, whatever feels appropriate, but I just, you guys have been through some intense seasons not that long ago and maybe continuing. And we're just so, we're honored to have your wisdom and what you have learned about, again, staying present, even when you want anything but to be in the moment because of what's happening.
Yeah, our story is so so interesting in the ways grief has compounded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about this morning. We didn't go into the depth of our own story with it, but, you know, grief is one of those things that just undoes you from the inside out. And it almost always occurs when you didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody wakes up and is like, you know what? Today, I'm excited really about grief work.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't wait to
today, I hope something just like is a deep loss in my life that I get to, you know, walk through. Nobody goes running towards it. It finds you. Mm-hmm. And for both of us, in 2019, I woke up to a phone call from my sister-in-law, and that phone call led to just one of those uncontrollable cries of just that guttural, life has just shifted forever for me. She awoke to my 47-year-old brother not breathing, and they had a 7-month-old baby.
That they had
lost so many children.
So much.
And so they had finally had their little one. And I will never forget, you know, hanging up the phone and getting in the Uber and driving across town and walking into their home and having one of those, like, just out-of-body experiences, thinking, like, God, how am I here? How is this possible? And holding my sister-in-law in one arm and my nephew in the other, knowing my brother was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was to come, all that needed to then transpire. And it was like an out-of-body experience. Like, I have to call my other brother. Mm-hmm. I have to call my mom. I have to, like, all those things. It's just, it's so visceral, right?
Yeah.
To be in the depth of loss. And to know all of life is changing. And that was 2019.
Mm-hmm.
COVID hit in 2020. And you can share then kind of where your life started to shift and change.
We were just probably a month and a half. It was in April COVID started in March. So we were all just like, finally, I think, getting kind of used to this. Our original thought was COVID would last till Easter and then we'd be back and, you know, everything would be fine. And then we began to realize, oh, this is not going away. And it was, so we were kind of settled into that new way of doing life and ministry. And yeah, very similar. We got a call from my sister and we haven't heard from your brother. We've been calling and calling and calling and calling. And one of my three brothers, and, you know, that's kind of escalated throughout the day. And we don't know where he's at and we haven't heard from him. And then eventually find out that, yeah, he had had a stroke and died suddenly in the shower. And no one was home. No one was there. Like, he was by himself when it happened. But now we're in this new lockdown. And so he's like, okay, one, this is grief. But now how do you grieve in the midst of this compounded complexity of lockdown? And we can't fly. We can't go. We can't. How do we do? How are we going to do a memorial service? How are we going to say? We didn't get to obviously say goodbye, but. And so as we are
in California,
he was in Albuquerque. He lived in Albuquerque with a couple where some of my family lives.
How old was he?
He was 57, 58, I think at the time. Yeah.
Young.
And yeah, this was already as my dad had suffered a stroke as well and was, had recovered pretty significantly, not cognitively as much, but physically like was, you know, he was in a home where he was receiving care. And so we'd gone out to visit him a couple times before COVID. And yeah, within 6 months of my brother dying, my dad took a turn and we lost him pretty suddenly. And that was in December. Mm-hmm. And
2020.
Yes.
Of 2020, yeah. And then it was, and we still hadn't done a service for my brother. I mean, it was just like this weird time. Like, how do we do this? How do we, because part of grief is that being together, that holding, that eating, that crying, that laughing, the story, all you, like there's something about the human soul that needs that togetherness. And we did not have it. We were all scattered across the country, my family. And, my brother Justin and I put together a virtual memorial service to honor the lives of my brother Scott and my dad and had to, you know, do it all virtually over Zoom. And it was beautiful. And it was, I think it was as beautiful as it could be. But I vividly remember after all the work, like Jeannie was talking about, all that stuff you have to organize when you lose someone. And after getting all, I took the bulk of that on my shoulders for the service. And I remember after it ended, I just sat and felt so empty and I just hadn't grieved. I had gotten caught up in the busyness of grief and not felt the depth of it. And it hit me pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Probably about 6 months later, I went into a pretty tough season of depression. And yeah, I remember I was still during COVID, so we're doing virtual, but I was trying to sit down and write a sermon that we were going to shoot on video and all the things, right? I remember sitting at my laptop and it was blank, you know, blank page, right? And I kind of remember coming to and it had been 2 hours and I'd just been staring at my computer, just done. I mean, just nothing to say, nothing left. And thankfully I had great care from a great therapist. Obviously, Jeannie is absolute amazing support. Our church staff is amazing and supportive. Our church community was amazingly loving and supportive. But again, all of this grieving was from a distance. That was the thing. It was so different from other grief. It's, you know, is having to do that virtually and from a distance. And so, yeah, it hit me later, even though I knew all the things. I knew, okay, this is, I know that I need to grieve this. I know I need space for this. It didn't catch up to my body. Yeah. My body didn't catch up to my soul probably till almost 6 months, 4 months later, maybe.
But in a season of, you know, from 2019 to 2020, we both lost a brother. Jarrett lost a dad. And my dad had passed from a very unexpected accident about 16 years before that. Mm. So we were both now entering into
this
depth of grief. Both of our moms are widows. And what we have just always believed is that the work that God has called us into is the work that he is going to then call us to do with others. And when it comes to grief, there's sometimes that experience of resistance, like, no. I don't want to do that.
Of course.
I don't want to do that, God. Like, I don't want to be the person that is always holding space for those that are walking through loss. That's so much. You know, you've talked about the compassion fatigue, the carrying of another person's story. And yet, when we are faithful to the things that God walks us through, we can't not be present to others that are walking through it.
It's like you said, you can't unsee.
And
like what you want to see, you can't unsee.
And what I'm thinking in this moment that's so fascinating is because so much of the grief was happening in lockdown, COVID, the great antidote to compassion fatigue and really showing up is proximity.
It is.
Totally. So there and it was not proximity. Available. Right.
No. Yes.
Right. So it really messed with your head.
It did. That's what I said. Yeah. It took it for that season me specifically. Yeah. It threw everything off. Not that there's a perfect schedule for grief, not by any stretch, but Jeannie and I have done enough work that I'm like, okay, I know this is going to happen. But yeah, I genuinely can point it back to we could not be together as a family, as people who love my brother and my father. Like, we couldn't just be together. As simple as that is, it's so important to the grieving process. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's been most helpful as you encounter grief, which, you know, doesn't have this upward trajectory or this sort of necessarily this progress? I mean, time tends to shift how we experience grief. But I mean, we'll 15 years later have something hit us out of the clear blue. And you're just like, gosh, that really hurts deeply still.
Yeah.
And
it's I didn't even know.
I didn't even know. And so what's a practice or what's been helpful?
Yeah, I mean, I can go first, but I want to hear what you have to say. I think the thing that helps most is when someone brings me a really simple verse to fix all my problems and just and especially if they text it to me, if they just text it to me and don't even look me in the eyes. Yeah, that feels
no words. Just the verse.
You should know this.
Just a link to the verse. that's usually the most healing and helpful. That is not helpful at all.
I know. Yeah. And it's usually so well intentioned.
Sometimes it is. Yes.
It is. It absolutely is. And sometimes it's just from somebody that hasn't done their own grief work. And
that's true.
So I can understand that and have a sense of grace and care around that. I would say one of the things that has been so helpful to me in my grief work is understanding and sharing my story. And then also understanding the story that I'm writing about my grief. And what I mean by the difference in that is there's the real story of what we all walk through, right? There's the actuality behind our lives and how we experience something. But the mind is a funny thing because the mind can then go and tell a whole bunch of stories about said thing. And to really decipher between the difference of what is the story I'm telling myself about this? And is it true? And is this story here to bring health and healing to me? Or am I recycling this story? And is it actually bringing me more harm? Like, is this not of service to my growth, to my transformation? And that has been really key in my grief work is what is the story I'm writing about this? And how might I shift from this story that potentially is causing harm to bring healing, to bring hope? And I think another thing is to enter into other people's grief. You know, one of the most sacred places in our church is this area right behind our auditorium, and we call it the prayer hall. And we now think that people come to our church and like they're coming for the prayer hall.
They're not coming to get to the prayer hall. I'm the opening act.
Yeah, the service is the opening act for the place where the real ministry goes down.
Whoa. Sure.
And every single time I go back there to pray with somebody, it is undoubtedly a moment where God has me pray for somebody that's walking through grief. And I'm like, man, God, how do you orchestrate this in such a way that the person that just walked up to me, it just randomly happened, they're walking up and they're carrying grief and they're holding grief. So there's something about entering into somebody else's grief story, even when you're carrying your own, that is so powerful to bring you towards healing. So I think those have been really significant in my own grief work is understanding what stories am I writing about this and are they leading me to healing and hope or to harm? And how can I enter into the life of another? Those two things.
Yeah. It's really, I think it's necessary for our healing.
It really
is,
yes.
Really get to that next deeper level until we're a part of somebody else's process. Usually, with the thread being the same thing that wounded us, you know, and which is really hard to go back to that place.
So many times, volunteers at camp are dealing with a lot of pain in their stories, and they know. I always tell them, so you know the secret. Getting outside of yourself, bringing in another hard story does something to your healing journey.
Well, I think, you know, the thing I thought of when you asked, like, sort of what helps, what is a guide, what is a comfort, I think one of the things that has been most helpful is to normalize grief. Because the way I typically tend to think of it is that in the most extreme cases, it's the death of my father, the death of my brother, those big things. But to incorporate grieving into, like, oh, this friendship has changed and ended, that is a loss. Yeah. That is a non-death loss. And that needs to be grieved. And I think there's something about practicing that more regularly that helps when the more significant events, like Gina was talking about, come into your life. because I have the discipline, I have the rhythm. You know, we have a book in the Bible, multiple books dedicated to wailing, to lamenting, to grieving, and yet we do so little of it in our Christian life, especially in our churches. And so, yeah, I think to normalize that, like this is a part of it. You don't, this isn't that one thing that you have to do, that one really hard time. There's things going on.
This
all
is a holy act.
Yes, it's part of our life with God.
Totally.
That letting go for, the, you know, you can still hold on to God while you let go of this thing. So,
Well, and I think like, yeah, that's so good. Life this side of heaven is just a series of little losses and
it
sometimes
is.
Big. I mean, like this, but we sort of compartmentalize it all away. Even pray it away or pretend it's not there or numb it or whatever. And we're really missing out on sort of this rhythm and this even muscle memory that will be really helpful as we encounter much deeper loss and pain. So that we can keep going through it, you know, because you can't go around it. You got to go through it.
It's true. And the reminder that we all have made it 100% through the hard things that we've walked through.
We're currently here.
But trying to hydroplane over it, trying to take a detour around it, trying to, you know, take a tunnel under it is not where we're going to meet God. We're going to meet God in the middle of it. You have to walk through it. You know, I mentioned the passing of my brother in 2019, and I had the privilege of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and that sounds like a flex. I am not a mountain climber, okay? So let me start there by saying I am not a mountain climber.
I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
I was invited to do this with a beautiful part of World Vision, and so I said yes to doing it.
Like a year before 2019.
Yes, so this is in 2019, but my brother passed 6 weeks before I was supposed to climb this mountain. And he passed in June, and I left in July to go climb this mountain. And most of the weeks right after his death were all of the, like, things one does, right?
The, that no one talks
from the
about.
Funeral to making sure
changing
people are
the
cared
bank,
for.
Changing the credit
all
cards,
of
changing the phone.
All specific things that have to happen, right? And I finally get on the plane, and I go to climb this mountain. And in some ways, it was very therapeutic because, you know, I'm in the middle of Africa, and there's no cell coverage. And I will never, ever forget this moment. We were climbing one day, and some girl in front of me that was on my trip, she was playing some worship music. And that song, The Reckless Love of God, came on. And there's that line in the song that says, there's no mountain he won't climb up coming after you. And that part of the song started playing. And I literally started weeping, like uncontrollably
the group
weeping.
Had to stop.
Because I, for the past 6 weeks, I had just kind of
held.
Like tried to push grief into all of the little compartments and not touch it. And there on the side of Mount Kilimanjaro, that line in that song broke me open. And I dropped my backpack and fell to the ground and wept. And everyone in my climbing crew just kind of held a sacred space. They didn't say anything. They just let me cry. They let me be in my grief. And yet were supportive with their love and their presence and their embodiment of what was going on. And eventually I, you know, got up and we walked to camp. And I didn't realize this, but one of our guides, one of our Sherpas on the mountain, picked up my pack. And he carried it the rest of the way for me. And when we got to camp, he came up to me and gave me my backpack. And he said, I felt like you needed somebody to carry your pack today. And I said, thank you. I didn't even realize it was gone. And I said, what is your name? And he said, my name is Emmanuel.
Oh, my like, God.
And I was like, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. Your name is Doug. Stop. Like, how, your name can't be Emmanuel. How is this possible?
Oh,
and
my gosh.
It was one of those moments to me. And, you know, it's one of those things that, like, only God can do on the side of a mountain in the middle of Africa. He sends a man named Emmanuel, right, to carry your backpack.
Truly with you.
And it was just one of those things where I was like, yep, this is what God does when we let him.
Wow.
When we let someone carry the burden. And, you know, anyone that's listening right now that is walking through grief and is carrying a pack that just, like, it literally feels too heavy. It feels like, I don't know if I can take one more step. Sometimes the work is just taking the pack off mm-hmm. and trusting that God's going to send someone to carry it.
Mm.
And you don't have to go find that person. Mm. You don't have to make it all happen, but to just trust that God orchestrates those things to bring others alongside of us to carry the pack when we can't carry it.
Mm. Yeah.
That is so poignant.
Did you guys know she was going to preach on this?
I mean, so this has been so beautiful, helpful. We just love knowing you more in the space and beyond. But to kind of close, we usually ask what's good in your story, what's hard in your story, and how are you holding the tension of those two things together right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it comes back to what we said earlier. I think it is both the good and the hard right now is parenting and supporting our kids through this season. It is so good. Like the connections that we have with them, the moment, the level of depth or connection or conversation or fun, you know, like when your kids are turning you on to new music and you're like, man, you actually have really good taste in music.
Yeah.
You know, like, how did you get that? I'd like to think I helped. but like, you know, we enjoy them so much. And, oh man, it feels so hard sometimes. I feel like I'm doing it all wrong. I feel like I need to go back. I went too fast. The time went too fast. We need to go back. We need to do it over again, you know, and obviously knowing that we can't and trying so hard at times I get in my head to not do it this way that my parents did or to make sure I did this thing. And so I can, it's like Jeannie says, the stories I tell, I can tell a lot of stories about myself as a parent. And it's, yeah, I would say it's the hardest thing right now because it matters the most to me.
Right. Mm.
So it's the thing that matters the most to me. I love them so much. And I just want to be faithful to the role in this season that God has for us because I know it's going to change. You know, our son's going to go to college next year. Now we're going to have a new relationship. Our daughter will go 2 years later. So yeah, I think I feel under-equipped. Even though Gene and I have worked with teenagers for years, we started out as youth ministry. You know, it's like we were great with everyone else's kids.
That's encouraging.
Yes, totally.
But now that it's ours and the stakes are so much higher because we love them so much that I feel like that's the good is so good with them. It's like so fun and so deep and also so hard. Yeah, right now for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would ditto. I feel all of those things, so I won't steal that. I'll add another good and hard. I am trying so hard to live in this reality that it all belongs and to not be in the binary, dualistic spaces that my mind is so tempted to go to. And what I mean by that, even using our kids, is that it's okay to be launching somebody. You know, our son's going to go to college next year. It's okay to be launching and to also be feeling loss. Mm-hmm. That those two both can
belong. Doesn't have to be one or the other.
It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yes.
And I'm so tempted towards the either or and to actually let myself live in the belief of the yes and instead.
Mm.
To do that as a leader. You know, I want to say like, well, this is what's right and this is what's wrong. And what if there's parts of it are right and parts of it are wrong?
Do you realize this is the whole theme of the podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's always both.
And it's such a beautiful thing to like put on a sticker or to put on the front of a book or to, you know, have as your Instagram handle, but to actually be in the moments where you're called to lay down that binary living, to lay down the dualistic way of holding people.
Yeah, what do we say about people all the time? Yeah. That we're mixed bags.
We are all mixed bags.
Right.
And I'm a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
And to hold that, you know, to hold that I have a mom that's growing older. Mm-hmm. And how can I come alongside of her and love her well and not try to change her anymore? To just go, she is who she is, and how can I just love her as she is? And how can I launch this son of mine well and at the same time absorb that this is a loss for me, you know? And so I would say the good and the hard for me is I feel like I'm fumbling my way towards learning how to live in the non-binary, non-dualistic way of living. And I think Jesus so beautifully lived there. He embodied it. That's what the kingdom of God is. You guys say that all the time here, that the lines are blurred. It's what I've experienced the last just 48 hours of being here. It's heaven on earth. It's the liminal space where heaven touches earth and humanity is celebrated for all of what it is meant to be. And so how do we live that way? So that's, I feel like I'm fumbling more towards it than I am.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. Aren't we all?
Tell us where we can find more about what you're doing, your beautiful church, your works, your books, all the things. You guys are brilliant.
Well, I did just release a book called What's Here Now. So practicing presence is something that I'm really trying to practice.
Please say the byline. It's glorious.
Yeah. So What's Here Now? How to Stop Rehashing the Past, Rehearsing the Future, and Start Receiving the Present.
I mean, so good.
That's the whole book. So that's it. You're in the rest.
I wrote the book I most needed. So
That's the best kind. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's amazing. So you can find that anywhere. But we both have websites. I'm JeanieStevens.com.
You're JarrettStevens.com. Two R's, two T's.
I mean, this is indicative. We have one website. Yeah, well. Like, you have your own. We have one. Like, I'm feeling self-conscious, Jay.
Oh, yeah. You need a branch. Catherine, yeah, I was telling you guys last night that I have a book out on prayer called Praying Through, and I'm really super proud of it. And I'm really grateful for the stories that God is bringing back from how it's helped people. And the thing I love most about it is it's on a shelf at our church called The Clearance Rack. And it's literally for sale. If you come to Soul City Church in Chicago, you can get that book for like $2.
I mean,
you've already given everything they needed for free.
Evidently, they've heard it before.
It's so good when at your own church, yours is the only book.
We try to do all kinds of work around our egos and letting those egos go. And so this is just one more step.
I don't pretend to know what you're walking through, listener. But I just so deeply believe, as do all of us on this podcast, that you are in a season. And this season may be a really, really tough one. But God has a new season coming. The beauty of seasons is they change. It's never the same. So hold on to hope. Keep persevering. God bless you, friend. Thank you for joining us on the Good Heart Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Heart Story Podcast is a production of Good Heart Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friend.